Welcome to Global Minnesota Podcasts, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesotans with the world and exploring important international issues. For a complete list of programs and to join us, visit globalminnesota.org.
Thank you, and thanks so much to Global Minnesota and to Min for hosting me, and thank you all for coming out tonight, and I would say thank you for coming out in this weather, but I have a feeling this isn't as bad as it gets in Minnesota. So. At Grameen Foundation, we are committed to eliminating extreme poverty and boosting shared prosperity, and we know that that can only be achieved with the full economic participation of women. Nearly 1 billion women globally, with the potential to contribute more fully to their economies, are constrained from doing so. And over 812 million of those women are in developing economies where their contributions are needed the most. The cost of leaving women out of full economic participation is simply unacceptable. In addition to basic economic fairness, empowering female entrepreneurs has the potential to create jobs, increase incomes, lift households out of poverty, and lead to greater economic and social transformation. Two factors contribute significantly to the high cost of marginalizing women from their full economic potential. First, there is evidence of a gender-based performance gap between female and male entrepreneurs. Women tend to enter into entrepreneurship activities at lower economic levels than men, with female entrepreneurs operating informally and concentrated in low productivity sectors with limited potential for growth. Second, while all entrepreneurs in developing countries experience significant obstacles in their business activities, evidence suggests that the extent of the barriers faced by women entrepreneurs is often significantly larger than those experienced by their male peers. Women-led enterprises face a number of constraints. Lack of access to capital is a major obstacle, but so are underdeveloped professional networks, insufficient business skills, legal discrimination, and the disproportionate burden of child and senior care. Women face obstacles to entrepreneurship, some of which start early in their lives. Women have less access to education than men, and their access to finance is constrained by significant obstacles to their owning and inheriting wealth and assets. Policy regulations and institutional discrimination affect women significantly. These obstacles can range from laws barring women from obtaining bank loans without male consent, to the implementation of regulation that target traditionally female-dominated businesses. Social norms also impact women. While the social pressure placed on women vary from country to country, social norms often limit women's economic participation by limiting their physical mobility or the time that they have available to run a business. Social norms underlie the sectors of economic activity women can work in, with the result that women tend to cluster in service sectors with low productivity and low opportunity for growth. Sexual harassment and security are challenges faced by women when interacting with government or with private sectors who can often be the gatekeepers to women starting and entering businesses. And I wanted to give an example. We run a program in Guatemala with the Department of State that is really focused on helping female entrepreneurs grow their businesses. And once we started that project and started working with the women who were the intended beneficiaries of the program, we really had to radically rethink that project. When we started talking to the women about our goal for them, that they should grow their business, they told us very quickly they had no desire to grow their businesses, that they intentionally kept their businesses small to stay under the radar of gangs and cartels, and that if they were to grow their business, they would become the object of harassment, of intimidation, of extortion. So we had to radically rethink and actually talk to the women that we intended to work with about what the goals for the project were going to be. And those goals became more about saving, creating economic stability for those women, and thinking long-term about their business goals, what their business goals were, rather than short-term growth. It's just one example of how we in the development sector have to kind of check our own assumptions about what women want from development, and actually talk to them about what they want. Why are women entrepreneurs so important? Entrepreneurship is a way to support women who live in extreme poverty around the world. By removing barriers to entrepreneurship, women are able to gain income, advocate for their own independence, and to take a more full role in society. Because women are also parents, breaking the hold of poverty on the lives of women also helps support children and families. All evidence we have shows that when women control resources within a household, they invest that in their families, specifically in education and in healthcare. And we know the long-term answer to poverty is increased education and increased healthcare. Evidence also shows that women in emerging marketplaces put as much as 90% of their earnings back into their local economy, an amount significantly higher than their male counterparts. Boosting the economic purchasing power of women clearly supports local economies, creating flourishing local markets. As I mentioned, women-owned small and medium enterprises globally tend to concentrate in low profitability and low growth sectors. Retail, beauty, food services are all among the sectors in which women focus. We've all seen the woman who cooks something at her home and then travels around the neighborhood to sell it. In Africa and Asia, about 75% of all women-owned businesses are in these consumer-oriented low growth sectors. The problem is that this centers women in sectors that are low earning and domestically focused with low prospects for economic and business growth, and it helps reinforce that gender pay gap. Focusing on these sectors also limits their financing opportunities. Banks consider these businesses less of an investment opportunity and less of a growth opportunity than male-dominated businesses. This has an impact on women entrepreneur herself, but also on her community, where small and medium enterprises, in particular, are important because they create jobs. Encouraging more women to own and create small enterprises increases job prospects. And not surprisingly, women are more likely to hire other women. So female entrepreneurship creates jobs for women, having a double impact on women's poverty in a community. But there's also opportunities for greater economic advancement. When women cross over into male-dominated sectors, such as tech, construction, real estate, even livestock rearing, they can earn three times as much as they do in a traditionally female-dominated sector. And evidence shows that when women enter male-dominated sectors, they perform just as well as their male counterparts. So they have the opportunity to earn as much if they have an opportunity to get into that sector. By encouraging women to enter male-dominated sectors and thereby changing the mindset of financial lenders and providing new opportunities for women to learn, grow, and develop entrepreneurship and business, women in developing countries can escape poverty and improve their country's economic condition. For the private sector, there is a good business reason to embrace women entrepreneurs. It can lead to greater profitability, enable them to better anticipate the needs in the market. When women run businesses, they understand the needs of other women, and they design products and services to meet those women's needs. And I'll give an example of that. Many of you may have heard of M-Pesa and kind of the revolution, particularly in East Africa, towards digital financial services, the idea that you have a wallet on your mobile phone, sort of like Venmo here. This has really revolutionized the way that people bank in the developing world and made financial services much more accessible. But there is still a massive gender gap in the use of those financial services. Not surprisingly, most of the people in the telcos and the banks are men, and they design products based on how men handle money. In Uganda, we underwent a project to try and understand what the barriers were to women and why women weren't using these digital wallets at the same rate that men were. And when we started talking to women, and we asked that we were focused very much on savings. Savings is a safety net for women. And we asked women, do you save money? Most women would answer, no, I am too poor to save. When you ask a woman, well, how do you pay for school fees? She says, oh, I have a little jar in the kitchen and I put my extra money in there when I have it so that I have some money to pay for school fees. If you ask women, well, what do you do in case someone in your family gets sick? Oh, well, I have an uncle in the next housing compound and I give him some money when I have a little extra so that if I have a health emergency, I can go to him and ask him for that money back. So women save, but they don't think of it as saving. They think about it in terms of what their household needs are and how they squirrel money away. And so what we did was work with the telco provider to say, can you take these wallets and just give them a name? Can you call it an education wallet? Can you call it a healthcare wallet? Can you call it a hungry season or a lean season wallet? And just by naming the wallets and giving women a way to think about saving differently and think about it in terms of the way they need to think about money, they massively increased the amount that they were saving on this platform, and it made the money for them much more secure, but it also took what they were doing informally and moved it into the formal sector. So it started to build an economic identity for them so that when they did, say, down the road, need access to credit, they'd already built up a relationship with this financial institution by developing a savings relationship with them. So it's really important that you have women in business because women in business understand the way that women in business think about money. So what are the barriers to women in accessing, in becoming entrepreneurial? Access to finance is obviously a huge barrier. It's one that we at the Grameen Foundation think about quite a bit. But financial institutions often perceive women to be riskier clients, higher cost clients, and lower return clients. This is despite the fact that all evidence is to the contrary. Women actually repay their loans at a much higher rate than men do. They stick with financial institutions much better than men do. So they, long term, they would make much better clients for banks. But banks don't think of them that way. Even among banks in the developing world that say they target women, an annual survey in 2017 on the banking of women by banks that say it's their focus found that only 35% of their customer base was women. Commercial banks are not aware of the market opportunities, and they lack the understanding on the different financial behaviors between men and women. A great example of this is a project we run with an MFI in Kenya called Musoni. Musoni is the first all-digital microfinance institution, so it doesn't deal with cash at all. It does all of its transactions over these mobile money platforms. Musoni was rolling out an agricultural lending product, and we worked with them to help them design that product. And we developed for them a digital interface. So instead of the loan officer going out and collecting the information and that person being the decision maker, they collect all the information on the farmers digitally. They run an algorithm that creates a credit profile based on the digital information, and they make a credit decision based on that credit profile. Agricultural finance to women is traditionally one of the hardest products. You have very, very low levels of women participation. Less than 10% globally of all agricultural loans go to women. 75% of all of these loans go to women because it's based on data rather than a subjective decision by the credit officer when he's visiting the farm. So by taking that gender bias out of the situation, we're able to massively increase the amount of financing that's going to women. Entrepreneurship prevalence rates, however, are only part of the story. A deeper look at the data reveals that a larger share of female than male entrepreneurs tend to be necessity entrepreneurs. In other words, they're driven to entrepreneurship by a lack of job opportunities in other sectors, rather than by a real desire and a focus on kind of growth and profit. Closely associated with that, with the higher incidence of necessity entrepreneurship and with their concentration in lower productivity sectors, is the fact that women-owned firms are significantly smaller than male-owned firms in terms of both employment and sales. They experience lower returns on capital and lower profitability. And frustratingly, those performance gaps widen the poorer a woman gets. So that's the bad news. The good news is there are lots of things we can do to support women entrepreneurs. First thing we could do is work on the mindset issues. Women tend to be much more risk averse than men. And this makes sense. Women often bear the full responsibility for ensuring that the household is maintained. Their money is the money that's used to feed children, to pay school fees. And so putting their money at risk in a business means risking the entire household. Studies have found, though, that when mindset interventions can prove extremely effective and instilling aspirations and shifting perceptions in women. A study in Ethiopia showed that a one-hour video to female rural farmers showing successful peers was enough to shift their behaviors to be more future-oriented. Another study in India that provided information to rural women on job opportunities for them in the outsourcing industry led to them staying in school longer, lowering their desired fertility rates, and having a higher likelihood of eventually entering the job market. So just changing their knowledge about what's possible for them creates this aspiration and encourages them to do things like stay in school in order to achieve that aspiration. We also need to challenge gender norms. Another pivotal component of any intervention is seeking to make a transformative change in challenging gender identity roles. In Tanzania, female entrepreneurs spend on average 10 hours less than their business counterparts per week in their business. This is because of women's time poverty, the unequal burden of home care that women take on in the developing and developed world. So there are ways that we can support female entrepreneurs that have nothing to do with directly, teaching her about business. There are ways we can support them by taking some of the time out of their day. One of the exciting ways that this is happening in slums in Kenya, this is not a Grameen project, but it's an exciting project nonetheless, is water vending machines. Women and girls spend an inordinate amount of time collecting water. So a group has created water vending machines in Kibera slum. The machines are solar powered and they clean the water. So women and girls can go purchase water. They bring their own containers. They're getting clean water close to home at a fraction of the cost that they would pay for it if they were to buy it from other sources. Another example of this is a company called Mkopa, which does what we call pay-as-you-go solar. So in addition to the time that women and girls spend collecting water, they also spend a huge amount of time collecting firewood to feed their families. A company called Mkopa has developed pay-as-you-go solar. So I liken it in some ways to your cable box. So Mkopa installs in a household solar panels and connects it to lights and to a cooking source. And it comes with a box. And so people are able to pay as they go. They can buy time from their solar system. So you can buy an hour today and 2 hours tomorrow. You pay for it using digital money, so you're able to transmit. Once you send the money, Mkopa sends a signal to your box, and it unlocks your system, and you're able to use your solar energy. All of the time that you use it goes towards paying for the system. So usually somewhere after 6 to 9 months, you've bought enough time on the system that you've paid it off, and it unlocks permanently, and then you have a solar system in your house. So this hugely reduces the time burden that women spend collecting firewood for the home. So things like this can really take some of that time burden off of women. There's certainly a lot we also have to do in terms of changing gender norms and the idea that this is always women's responsibility to take care of these household duties. Women have far less say in important household and business decisions, and their resources can often be diverted towards household expenditures. One of the things we've done to help combat that is a program called Gender Dialogues. It's one of the things we find is that households in the developing world often don't have conversations about household goals. Not financial goals, but just goals. Is it our goal that our kids are going to graduate from secondary school? Is it our goal that our kids are going to go on to achieve some type of trade or higher education? Is it our goal that we're going to be able to afford for our parents to live with us and for us to be able to support them when they get older? What are our household financial goals? What are our household goals? And then financially, how are we going to meet those goals? And for men to start to understand that women's businesses can contribute to meeting jointly held goals. And we find that when this happens, men then start to prioritize women's businesses more than they would otherwise. Then they start to be more willing to take on roles within the household because they understand how they're taking on those roles helps the household meet its overall goals. So this takes the pressure off of a conversation about who has power in the house, and it takes it to a conversation about what are our joint goals as a household and how are we both going to contribute to those goals. And we find taking that power dynamic out of the discussion can often lead to a much more productive discussion. In developing countries in particular, financial barriers can be combined with legal and policy barriers and discrimination. This can include the inability of married women to travel without a male escort, barriers to women receiving identification cards, and identification cards are required in almost all circumstances to open a bank account or to own land, and legal constraints around women's ability to sign a contract on her own or access a bank account or register a business. In too many countries, women are still considered legal minors, so they have the same status as a minor, and they must have a male relative sign with them to open a bank account or to enter into a contract. Research shows that the higher number of gender-based legal restrictions, the lower the female participation in business ownership. 200 million women still live in countries which legally require formal permission from a husband or a male relative to start a business. There's been some progress on introducing reforms aimed at reducing these gender-based economic restrictions. In Ethiopia, for example, reforms in family law that allow women to pursue economic opportunities without requiring a husband's permission and the joint ownership of marital property have led to an increase in women's participation in work outside the home, have led to women's fuller participation in full-time work, and have led to women being engaged in higher skilled and higher paid work. In most countries, however, we still have a long way to go to address these legal barriers to women's entrepreneurship. We also need to build entrepreneurial skills in women. Training is often focused on entrepreneurship Training is often a focus of entrepreneurship programs for women, but standard business training doesn't work as well for women as it does for men. Successful interventions for women require designing curriculum that are appropriate to their needs and cultural contexts, and the training of instructors to effectively support those needs, and the organization of mentoring and networking events to create links among women entrepreneurs while opening market opportunities in male-dominated sectors. These programs can seek to address constraints associated by social norms, by integrating community engagement elements, by discussing with community leaders the positive role that female entrepreneurs can have in their community, and by organizing joint sessions with spouses on how to support female entrepreneurship. Where appropriate, these approaches can be combined with access to financial products tailored to financial entrepreneurs. The objective is to create a pipeline of female entrepreneurs with better business skills and capabilities, and then to link them to access to financial products. In India, we do this in a program called Grameen Mitras. In India, Grameen is a bit of a generic word. It means village or community, and Mitra means friend. So these women are Grameen Mitras, which means kind of a village friend, a friend that other women in the community can rely on. These agents help women to become more literate about financial services and about business opportunities. They use a digital training platform to train women. They also use some pretty exciting and innovative artificial intelligence and augmented reality training tools to create some interesting training opportunities and experiences for women, to give them kind of real-time simulations that they can use on accessing finance. But the women then also were able to directly offer financial services over a digital platform, over a tablet, to women. So we partner with banks and other providers in India. They put their products on the platform so that these Mitras are able to not only train women on financial literacy, but offer those same products to them right there at their doorstep. Another thing we are actively engaged in is engaging men and boys. Men still hold power in relationships and in communities, and their attitudes need to change. One of the ways we do this is by finding opportunities, more and more opportunities for men and women to work together. A lot of the financial services in both in Asia and Africa is done in groups. In Africa, we have something called savings groups. In India and Asia, they're often called self-help groups. And evidence has really shown that when men and women participate in those groups together, women perform better financially. And that actually goes against, we did quite a bit of research on this. There's a lot of groups that are women only, and we thought of this as like a safe space for women to get away from men and to save without men. But actually, it turns out that when men and women are together, women do better. Men are able to become mentors to women. Men often have business connections. But it also changes men's attitudes about women. They see women as business people. They see that women have the same business challenges and business problems that they have. They see women can give them advice on their business as well as them being able to give women advice. And it starts to change the men's mindset about women as entrepreneurs. Getting to what is kind of the heart of what Grameen does, access to finance. It's something that's very important to us, and a lot of the things we do kind of contributes to trying to make it more women more successful when they do access finance and try and invest in their business. Similar to the Mitra program, Grameen runs a program called CAN, Community Agent Networks, in the Philippines. And this is women who run little small kiosk shops, and we have trained them and set them up to become mobile money agents. So they're able to offer financial products, everything from paying your bills to paying your taxes to accessing a bank account. They can do directly from these little shops. Over 18 months, we created about 2,200 agents. Those agents processed 4.3 million transactions valued at over $24.8 million. So that tells you how much money women kind of keep outside of the formal financial sector, and when they're given access and a touch point into the formal sector, how much they can add to the economy. The other thing we found, though, is that women make great digital financial service agents. In many environments, simply having a female agent is the access point. In a lot of communities, women are not able to interact with men who aren't their relatives. So if the only agents in town are men, then women wouldn't be able to use them. So simply by putting a female agent in a community, we're creating more access for women. But what we've also found is that women agents are more patient. They are willing to take time to explain to the women in their communities how financial products work. They're willing to train them on how to do the service on their phone so that they're able to have successful transactions. One thing we know is that for a man, it takes him about 3 successful attempts to use a digital platform for financial services before he becomes a regular user. Women need between 7 and 9 successful transactions before they become successful users. So having that agent there who can help a woman and make sure that her transaction is successful helps to ensure that she'll become a regular user. Finally, I want to talk just a little bit about farming as a business. Over 60% of women in developing economies participate in agriculture, but they don't think about farming as a business. They think of it as a way to feed their family and as sustenance, and they think about it as the only thing they can do, the only activity that's going on in their community. So it's really important that we help communities and women in particular stop thinking of farming as a food source and start thinking of it as a business. So we work with different partners in different markets to help improve what we call GAP, good agricultural practices. So we work with female farmers to provide them the information they need to adopt better farming practices. And we use technology to do that. We use tablet-based systems to collect information on farmers and to provide them then better information. But we also use some pretty sophisticated technology. So precision farming in the U.S. Has become the norm, using satellite-based data to more accurately and efficiently farm. We have started a program in Ghana using satellite information to do precision-based farming with smallholder farmers. Satellite data can help provide information to farmers on everything from their soil moisture content, so they're only using water when they need to, on their soil quality, so they're only investing in and using the amount of fertilizer and inputs that they need to, and they're spending less. It can give them information that they need on proper pruning techniques, if they've overpruned or underpruned, and all of that is available from satellite data and then is sent directly to the farmer. We can also use this to manage weather risks. So if there's a weather event coming, we can send information to the farmer and provide the farmer with tips on how they can prepare for that weather event. And we can also help with pest management. So the farmer can take a picture if they're one of the things with climate change these days is that new pests are coming into areas that they weren't in before. So if a farmer sees a pest that they don't know how to deal with, they can take a picture of it and they send it into the system. We partner with a university in Ghana, so that picture is analyzed and information is then sent back to the farmer with advice on how to manage that pest. But it can also triangulate. So if multiple farmers in a geographic area send in information on the same pest, then all farmers in that geographic area will be sent an update saying there is this pest in your community and you need to take steps X, Y, and Z to manage that pest. So using technology to really help female farmers transform and become more commercial I'm trying to be more climate smart and not use paper in my presentation. Anyway, but it also helps these female farmers deal with climate change and climate adaptation. Because things are happening so rapidly in Africa, some of the traditional methods of farming are no longer adequate, and so providing real-time information to female farmers helps them deal with the rapidly changing environmental situation. So I just wanted to end with a quote from one of these Grameen Mitras that we have in India, a woman who has become a service provider in her community and earns an income from being a service provider. Her name is Vanda, and she's based in Nagpur in India. And she says, "I was never content with being a housewife. I wanted to earn my own money and be independent. So when I heard about Grameen Foundation's Mitra program, I was determined to join. I had never used a smartphone before, but I knew that it was important to learn because of the new digital services across India. But first, I needed a phone. I earned my down payment by picking cotton in scorching 122-degree Fahrenheit weather. I now pay my monthly installments using the money I earn as a Grameen Mitra. I'm proud I ignored the naysayers who told me not to become a Mitra. People now see me not just as a mother and as a wife, but as an independent woman. And I think there's nothing more we could wish for these women." So I want to say thank you and invite Mark back.